Escuelas Oficiales de Idiomas de la Comunidad de Madrid. Pruebas de certificación. Comprensión de textos orales. Inglés. Certificado de nivel avanzado C1. Convocatoria de junio de 2023.
This test has three tasks. You will hear the first two tasks twice and task three only once. Task 1. You will hear part of a program. Choose the option A, B or C that best completes the sentences according to what you hear and write it in the corresponding white box. Sentence 0 is an example. Now read the sentences.
And Michael, in the touch test, you ask people whether they would be willing or not to engage in digital forms of touch. What did people say?
People were really open to using technology for touch that might provide massage functions, for instance. That was one of the most common things that people were really quite happy to engage with. But then if you looked at something maybe more, let's say, like shaking hands remotely, some technology that might allow you to do that, a real kind of slightly more negative shift towards that type of options. So it depended very much on the types of touch we were talking about. I mean, some of the other examples, like things like sending or giving a kiss via technology remotely, that was something where, again, there was a bit more negativity rather than positivity towards that type of example.
It's really interesting, I think. I mean, Kerry, with these devices, is the idea mainly to mimic what actual touch would be like, or to somehow create the illusion of being touched? Is there even a distinction between those two things?
There is a distinction. I think it's interesting to think about what it is you're replicating. Can you replicate touch in a meaningful way digitally? I think you can, but the actual physiological sensation part of it, those technologies are quite reduced the kind of sensations they give you. So really you're relying on the person, especially if they know someone really well, to contextualize, to draw on their tactile memories of that other person. And they bring that knowledge and experience to interpreting touch. So the technology is just one tiny part of how we create touch experiences between ourselves.
So do you think in this time of COVID, you know, we could offer some hope to people who can't touch their relatives in hospitals? In the future, could you have some kind of device that maybe didn't mimic the exact touch, but that gave us what is so great and so powerful about that touch if you can't see somebody in person?
Yeah, because if what you're trying to do through touch is basically say, I'm here and I love you and I want to feel connected with you, I don't think that we need to kind of have a machine that pokes somebody or kind of mimics a stroke in that way. I think it could be something more imaginative. Also, I think people are incredibly good at creating meaning through very reduced digital forms, especially when they're communicating in an established relationship.
Now, there is so much going on in this field, and we've got something we're going to try out that I've got in this box here. And this is something you've created, David, which is you're using touch to help deaf people to translate touch into sound. And I'm just putting on this kind of watch now, which is linked to an app on my phone. Can you explain what this is, how this works? I'm just putting it on now.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a wristband. What it's doing is it's capturing sound, turning that into patterns of vibration on the skin of the wrist. So people who are deaf can get what's happening in the auditory world because they are capturing this as patterns on their skin. And that, of course, climbs up their arm and into their brain. And it turns out what the brain is very good at doing is understanding patterns and making correlations. So you see the dog's mouth moving and you feel the buzzing on your wrist and you put those together. And through time, just by being in the world, they can come to get what's going on in the auditory world. And after a few months, actually, people report a direct perceptual experience of hearing. In other words, it's not, oh, there was a buzz on my wrist, so I looked around and I saw something going on. Instead, it's, oh, yeah, I heard the dog bark. I heard the knock on the door, the doorbell, the person talking directly, exactly as we do with our ears, which are just capturing air compression waves and then sending series of spikes into our brains. In this case, the series of spikes comes in through a different route, but the brain can figure out what to make of it.
So I've been playing with this, and basically every time I talk, because it's responding to sound, I can feel the vibrations of me talking. But what's really interesting playing with it is, you know, the first thing I did was sort of say yes and no, and straight away noticed that those came out slightly different. And so I was almost sort of able to learn yes and no straight away. Can it do language as well? Or is it always going to do like translating the dog bark or the doorbell?
Yeah, somewhere in between. We don't actually know the upper limits of this. We're still experimenting as people wear this for 4 months or 6 months, how good they get at it.
Now, digital touch does raise some ethical issues. There was that poor dancer for a start. Carrie, are there worries about, I don't know, you could use something that could hug you from a distance to harass people or touch them when they didn't want to? What sorts of ethical issues are we looking at here?
Ethics always comes up as a massive issue around privacy, around consent. Say, like, if we take an example of these huggy pyjamas that have been made, which in a sense have been made for a child to wear and a parent who's working late at the office to be able to put them to bed. That's kind of quite a sweet idea that, you know, you're not available, you want to give your child a hug, they need you. But what if...
What, and the pyjamas will hug them for you?
It's a kind of inflatable vest. So that technology, so imagine you've got a parent working late at the office and they send a hug. That sounds kind of pretty okay. But imagine they've asked their administrator to do it because they haven't got enough time and they haven't managed to get back to the office in time. Does it matter? Does it matter that that child's being hugged, that they can't authenticate that touch? And also, what would it feel like as a child to be hugged remotely? And so all this sense of capture, storing and sharing of images is a massive issue in our current world. But if we take that through to this more intimate sense of touch and the idea of a touch being able to be recorded, shared, the questions of ownership, when does the touch not become yours anymore, how might it be replayed? These are fears which I think probably are quite fantastical, but also sit behind, I think, some of your survey results, because we don't really understand what touch technology is yet.
Now, listen again.
And Michael, in the touch test, you ask people whether they would be willing or not to engage in digital forms of touch. What do people say?
People were really open to using technology for touch that might provide massage functions, for instance. That was one of the most common things that people were really quite happy to engage with. But then if you looked at something maybe more, let's say, like shaking hands remotely, some technology that might allow you to do that, a real kind of something more negative shift towards that type of options. So it depended very much on the types of touch we were talking about. I mean, some of the other examples, like things like sending or giving a kiss via technology remotely, that was something where, again, there was a bit more negativity rather than positivity towards that type of example.
It's really interesting, I think. I mean, Kerry, with these devices, is the idea mainly to mimic what actual touch would be like, or to somehow create the illusion of being touched? Is there even a distinction between those two things?
There is a distinction. I think it's interesting to think about what it is you're replicating. Can you replicate touch in a meaningful way digitally? I think you can, but the actual physiological sensation part of it, those technologies are quite reduced, the kind of sensations they give you. So really you're relying on the person, especially if they know someone really well, to contextualize, to draw on their tactile memories of that other person. And they bring that knowledge and experience to interpreting touch. So the technology is just one tiny part of how we create touch experiences between ourselves.
So do you think in this time of COVID, you know, we could offer some hope to people who can't touch their relatives in hospitals? In the future, could you have some kind of device that maybe didn't mimic the exact touch, but that gave us what is so great and so powerful about that touch if you can't see somebody in person?
Yeah, because if what you're trying to do through touch is basically say, I'm here and I love you and I want to feel connected with you, I don't think that we need to kind of have a machine that pokes somebody or kind of mimics a stroke in that way. I think it could be something more imaginative. Also, I think people are incredibly good at creating meaning through very reduced digital forms, especially when they're communicating in an established relationship.
Now, there is so much going on in this field, and we've got something we're going to try out that I've got in this box here. And this is something you've created, David, which is you're using touch to help deaf people to translate touch into sound. And I'm just putting on this kind of watch now, which is linked to an app on my phone. Can you explain what this is, how this works? I'm just putting it on now.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a wristband. What it's doing is it's capturing sound, turning that into patterns of vibration on the skin of the wrist. So people who are deaf can get what's happening in the auditory world because they are capturing this as patterns on their skin. And that, of course, climbs up their arm and into their brain. And it turns out what the brain is very good at doing is understanding patterns and making correlations. So you see the dog's mouth moving and you feel the buzzing on your wrist and you put those together. And through time, just by being in the world, they can come to get what's going on in the auditory world. And after a few months, actually, people report a direct perceptual experience of hearing. In other words, it's not, oh, there was a buzz on my wrist, so I looked around and I saw something going on. Instead, it's, oh, yeah, I heard the dog bark. I heard the knock on the door, the doorbell, the person talking directly, exactly as we do with our ears, which are just capturing air compression waves and then sending series of spikes into our brains. In this case, the series of spikes comes in through a different route, but the brain can figure out what to make of it.
So I've been playing with this, and basically every time I talk, because it's responding to sound, I can feel the vibrations of me talking. But what's really interesting playing with it is, you know, the first thing I did was sort of say yes and no, and straight away noticed that those came out slightly different. And so I was almost sort of able to learn yes and no straight away. Can it do language as well? Or is it always going to do like translating the dog bark or the doorbell?
Yeah, somewhere in between. We don't actually know the upper limits of this. We're still experimenting as people wear this for 4 months or 6 months, how good they get at it.
Now, digital touch does raise some ethical issues. There was that poor dancer for a start. Kerry, are there worries about, I don't know, you could use something that could hug you from a distance to harass people or touch them when they didn't want to? What sorts of ethical issues are we looking at here?
Ethics always comes up as a massive issue around privacy, around consent. Say, like, if we take an example of these huggy pyjamas that have been made, which in a sense have been made for a child to wear and a parent who's working late at the office to be able to put them to bed. That's kind of quite a sweet idea that, you know, you're not available, you want to give your child a hug, they need you. But what if...
What, and the pyjamas will hug them for you?
It's a kind of inflatable vest. So that technology, so imagine you've got a parent working late at the office and they send a hug. That sounds kind of pretty okay. But imagine they've asked their administrator to do it because they haven't got enough time and they haven't managed to get back to the office in time. Does it matter? Does it matter that that child's being hugged, that they can't authenticate that touch? And also, what would it feel like as a child to be hugged remotely? And so all this sense of capture, storing and sharing of images is a massive issue in our current world. But if we take that through to this more intimate sense of touch and the idea of a touch being able to be recorded, shared, the questions of ownership, when does the touch not become yours anymore? How might it be replayed? These are fears which I think probably are quite fantastical, but also sit behind, I think, some of your survey results, because we don't really understand what touch technology is yet.
This is the end of task 1.